Falls on a cliff, the hardy boys number two, Franklin the Holy Dixon. Chapter one, spying by telescope, so you boys want to help me on another case. Ben Hardy, internationally known detective, smiled at his teenage sons. Dad, you said you're working on a very mysterious case right now. Frank spoke up. Isn't there some angle of it that Joe and I could tackle? Mr. Hardy looked all the widow of his second more study, as if searching for the answer somewhere in the town of Bayport, where the Hardys lived. Finally, he turned back again steadfastly at his sons. All right, how would you like to look for some smugglers? Joe Hardy's eyes opened wide. You mean it, Dad? Now just a minute. The detective held up his hand. I didn't say capture them. I just said look for them. Even that's a big assignment. Thanks for giving it to us, Frank replied. The lean, athletic detective walked to the corner of the study where a long, narrow carrying case stood. Tapping it, he said, you boys have learned how to manipulate this telescope pretty well. How would you like to take it out onto that high promontory above the ocean and trade it seaward? The place I mean is 2 miles north of the end of the bay and 8 miles from here. That would be great, said 17-year-old, blonde-haired Joe, his blue eyes flashing in anticipation. Frank, who was a year older than his brother, less impetuous, asked in a serious tone of voice, Dad, have you any ideas about the identity of any of the smugglers? Yes, I do, Mr. Hardy answered his tall, dark-haired son. I strongly suspected a man named Felix Natman is operating in his territory. I'll give you the whole story. The detective went on to say that he had been engaged by an international pharmaceutical company to trace stolen shipments of valuable drugs. Reports of thefts had come from various parts of the United States. Local police had worked on a case, but so far had failed to apprehend any suspects. Headquarters of the firm is in India, the detective told the boys. It was through them that I was finally called in. I'm sure that the thefts are the result of smuggling, very cleverly done. That's the reason I suspect that one. He's a noted criminal and has been picks up his ugly rat before. He served a long term in prison, but after being released, dropped out of sight. But you think he's working around Bayport? Joe asked. He whistled. That doesn't make this town a very healthy place to live in. But we're going to make it so, Mr. Hardy declared. A ring of severity in his voice. Just where is this time here to use a telescope? Frank asked eagerly. It's on a polite place. You'll see the name at the entrance. An old man named Felix Pollitt lived there alone for many years. He was found dead in a house about a month ago, and the place has been vacant ever since. It sounds as if we could get a terrific range up and down the shore from there, and many miles across the water, Frank remarked. Mr. Hardy glanced at his wristwatch. It's 1:30 now. You ought to be able to go out there, stay a fair amount of time, but still get home to supper. Oh, easily, Joe answered. Our motorcycles can really burn up the road. His father smiled, but cautioned. This telescope happens to be very valuable. The less chancing it receives, the better. I get the point, Joe, 'cause he did. Then asked, Dad, do you want us to keep the information about the smugglers to ourselves, or would it be alright to take a couple of the fellows along? Of course I don't want the news broadcast, Mr. Hardy said, but I know I can trust your special friends. Call them up. How about Chet and Biff? Joe consulted Frank. As his brother nodded, he said, you pack the telescope on your motorcycle. I'll phone. Chet Morton was a stout, good-natured boy who loved to eat. Next to that, he enjoyed being with the Hardys, but sharing their exciting adventures. Although at times, when situations became dangerous, he wished he were somewhere else. Chet also loved to tinker with machinery and spent long hours on his jalopy, which he called clean. He was trying to soup up the motor so that he could have a real hot rod. In contrast to Chet, Biff Hooper was tall and lanky. To the amusement and wonder of the other boys, he used his legs almost as a spider does, covering tremendous distances on level ground or vaulting fences. A few minutes later, Joe joined his brother in a garage and told him that both Chet and Biff would go along. said, had to apologize for not being able to offer sick leave for the trip, but her aunt was all over the garage. As usual, Frank said with a grin as the two boys climbed on their motorcycles and set out. Presently the party stopped at Biff Hooper's home. He ran out the door to meet them and climbed aboard behind Joe. Chet lived on a farm at the outskirts of Bayport, about a 15-minute run from the Hooper home. This town boy had strolled down the lane to the road and was waiting for his friends. He hoisted himself onto Frank's motorcycle. I've never seen a powerful telescope in operation, he remarked. How far away can you see with this thing? It all depends on weather conditions, Frank replied. On a clear day you can make out human figures at distances of 24 miles. Wow, Chet exclaimed. We ought to be able to find those muggers easily. I wouldn't say so, Biff spoke up. Smugglers have the same kind of boats as everybody else. How close do you have to be to identify a person? Oh, about 2.5 miles, Joe answered. The motorcycles chugged along the shore road, with Frank watching his speedometer carefully. We ought to be coming to the Pollitt place soon, he said finally. Keep your eyes open, fellows. The boys rode on in silence, but suddenly they all exclaimed together, there it is, at the entrance to a driveway thickly lined with trees and bushes was a stone pillar, into which the name Pollitt had been chiseled. Frank and Joe turned into the driveway. The only part of the house they could see was the top of the roof. Finally, beyond a lawn overgrown with leaves, they came upon a tall, rambling building. It stood like a beacon high above the water. Pounding surf could be heard far below. This place sure looks neglected, Biff remarked. Dank, tall grass grew beneath the towering trees. Weeds and bushes threatened to engulf the whole building. Creepy, if you ask me, Chet spoke up. I don't know why anybody would want to live here. The house itself was in need of repair. Built of wood, it had several sagging shutters and the paint was leaking badly. Poor old Mr. Pollitt was probably too sick to take care of things, Frank commented, as he looked at several wee-shaped flower beds. To the party's disappointment, this guy had become over tested, they realized that visibility had been cut down considerably. Nevertheless, Frank was wrapped a carrying case and looked in around to the front of the house. He unfastened the locks and Joe helped his brother lift out the telescope, a detached tripod, pulling up the IM section first. Biff and Chad exclaimed in admiration. Boy, that's really neat, Chad remarked. He and Biff watched in fascination as Frank and Joe began to set up the telescope. First they unfastened the tape with which the two tripod legs were tied together. Joe turned the three legs down and pulled out the extensions to the desired height. Then Frank secured the tripod legs with a chain to keep them from spreading. What's next? Biff asked. To get proper balance for the main telescope to please light it through this runny sleeve toward the eye and like this. After doing so, Frank tightened the wing nuts on the tripod lightly. Joe picked up the balance weight from the carrying case and screwed it into the right side of the telescope to about 1/3 the distance from the eyepiece. This LL keeps the whole thing from being top heavy, he pointed out. And watch this little telescope alongside the big one for Chet queried. The house on a cliff grin. He squinted through the hands of both the large and the small telescopes. I can't see a thing, he complained. Joe laughed. But you won't until I insert one of the eyepieces into the adapter of the big telescope and put another eyepiece into the finder. In a few minutes the hardies had a fascinating device working. By turning a small knob, Frank slowly slung the telescope from left to right, and each boy took a turn looking out across the water. Not a boat in sight, said Chet, disappointed. Frank had just taken his second turn squinting through the eyepiece when he called out excitedly, I see something! He now began running account of the scene he had just picked up. It's not very clear, but I see a boat. Must be at least 6 miles out. What kind of boat? Joe put in. Looks like a cruiser or a cutter. It's not moving. Want to take a look, Joe? Frank's brother changed places with him. Say, fellows, a man's going over the side on a ladder. And hey, there's a smaller boat down below. He's climbing into it. Could you see any more numbers on a big boat? Frank cast excitedly. No, the poster had a funny angle, so you can't see the lettering. You couldn't even if the weather was clearer. Which way is the man in this hollow heading? Say fast. He seems to be going towards our midday. Joe gave up his position to Biff. Suppose you keep your eye on him for a while, and also the big boat. Maybe it will turn so you could catch a name or number on a box. Chet had been silent for several moments. Now he said, do you suppose they're the smugglers? Could be, Frank replied, I think we better leave and report this to Dad from the first telephone lead. He was interrupted by this sudden, terrifying scream of a man. WH, where did that come from? Chet asked with a frightened look. Sounded as if it came from inside, Frank hazarded. The boys stared at the house on a cliff. A moment later they heard a loud cry for help. It was followed by another scream. Somebody's in there and is in trouble. Joe exclaimed, we'd better find out what's going on. Leaving the telescope, the four boys ran to the front door and tried to knock. The door was locked. Let's scatter and see if we can find another door, Frank suggested. Frank and Joe took one side of the house, Biff and Chet the other. They met at the rear of the old home and together tried the door there. This too was locked. There's a broken window around the corner, Biff announced. Shall we climb in? I guess we'd better, Frank hazarded. As the boys reached the window, which seemed to open into a library, they heard the scream again. Help! Hurry! Came an agonized cry. Chapter 2, the fatter J.O.E. was first to slide through the broken window. Wait a moment, fellows, he called out, until I unlock this. Quickly he turned the catch, raised the window, and the other three boys stepped inside the library. No one was there and they ran into the large center hall. Hello, Frank shouted. Where are you? There was no answer. Maybe the person who was calling for help has passed out or is unconscious, Joe suggested. Let's look around. The boys dashed in various directions and investigated the living room with its old-fashioned furnishings, the dining room with its heavily carved English oak set, the kitchen, and what had evidently been a maid's bedroom in days gone by. Now time as empty boxes in grace. There was no one in any other room but the parties and their two friends met again in the hall. The man must be upstairs, Frank decided. He started up the front stairway, but the others followed. There were several bedrooms. Suddenly Jeff hung back. He wanted to go with his house, but the eeriness of the house made him pause. Biff and the party sped from one to another of the many rooms. Finally they investigated the last of them. Nobody here. What do you make of it? Biff asked, puzzled. Chet, who had rejoined the group, said worriedly, "And maybe the place is haunted." Joe's eyes were searching for an entrance to the third floor. Seeing none, he opened three doors in a hall, hoping to find a stairway. He saw none. There must be an attic in his house, he said. I wonder how you get to it. Maybe there's an entrance from one of the bedrooms, Frank suggested. Let's see. The boys have paraded to investigate. Suddenly Frank called out, I found it. The others ran to where he had discovered a door behind a man's shabby robe hanging inside a closet. This in turn revealed the stairway. The group hurriedly climbed it, Chet bringing up the rear. The attic room was enormous. Old newspapers and magazines were strewn around among old-fashioned trunks and suitcases, but there was no human being inside. I guess that cry for help didn't come from the house at all, Biff suggested. What the hell will we do now? Look outdoors. I guess we'll have to, Frank hazard. He started down the steep stairway. Reaching the foot, he turned the handle of the door which had swung shut. To his concern, he was not able to open it. What's the matter? Asked Chet from the top of the stairway. Looks as if we're locked in, Frank told him. Locked in? Chet wailed. Oh no. Frank tried pulling and pushing the door. It did not budge. That's funny, he said. I didn't see any lock on the outside. Suddenly the full import of this situation dawned on the four boys. Someone had deliberately locked them in. The cries for help had been a hoax to lure them into the house. You think somebody was playing a joke on us? Biff asked. Pretty rotten kind of joke, Chet sputtered. Frank and Joe were inclined to think that there was more to it than a joke.